want the Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. Today we're going to talk about an alarming new trend. The Disney Corporation and others are firing American workers and replacing them with foreigners who have H-1B visas. In a moment, you'll meet attorney James Otto from Southern California. He's bringing legal action against Disney and other employers who have fired Americans and replaced them with imported labor under our H-1B visa program, which has all kinds of rules that are supposed to protect American workers, but apparently those rules don't work. It's pretty stunning, and I hope you'll listen and get active on this issue. Every day I like to thank the people who support my work with your subscriptions to the Peter B. Collins podcast. People like Bob Levin, Brian Massey, Yolanda Serge-Wandel, and Barbara Johnson. They're all annual subscribers to the Peter B. Collins podcast, and I invite you to join them. I need more people to support my work here. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. Under my picture on the homepage, you click the sign-up link. Next page, you can choose $5, $10, $20 a month, a one-time contribution of any amount, or the $50 annual subscription. And new annual subscribers earn a bonus gift. It's the ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's Empire of Chaos. Can you believe that Disney is firing Americans and replacing them with non-citizens? Yes, it's such a small world that hundreds of Americans who've worked for the Disney Corporation have not only been sacked, but they have been forced to train their replacements and told to get used to it. Joining me today is attorney James A. Otto. He served in the Marine Corps. And for about 6 years, he worked for the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, prosecuting violators of civil rights laws in employment and housing. And he has filed a blockbuster lawsuit against Disney and a couple of other plaintiffs for the case that I just described. Jim Otto, thanks for being with us today.
Well, hi, and thank you for inviting me and having me on the show.
When did you first get wind that Disney was replacing American workers with foreigners, and this appears to be happening on a pretty large scale?
Well, to answer the second part of the question, I've started in 2010. I've been practicing law for 33 years, but around 2010, I acquired some clients who had been replaced by imported contractors. And so I investigated that, and I have filed a lawsuit against Molina Healthcare, Inc., a $5 billion a year corporation out of Long Beach, California, and we're alleging $200 million in damages because they intentionally exclude U.S. workers. And in fact, before 2010, they had a very diverse workforce. After 2012, they renamed themselves Little Mumbai because it was only all Indians.
Wow.
And then the Disney incident came to light around April of this year when a supervisor from the Disney ABC Studios in Burbank, California, approached me. And also there are several individuals from Anaheim, from Disneyland in Anaheim, California, approached me mm-hmm. about the fact that they were being targeted for layoffs. In fact, part of the allegations that we have filed with the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, which is the agency that helps prosecute illegal discrimination, employment discrimination, is that Disney intentionally brought in a director to oversee the replacement of the U.S. workers. And the first day he gathers everybody together and he says, anybody who's worked here more than 5 years is destined to be gone because you're too old to work for Disney. Mm. And he took the supervisor and he brought him to the front of the group and he says, now look at Mr. So-and-so. He's been here for 25 years and he's got to have Alzheimer's because he's been here way too long. He's just too old. And then he proceeded, the supervisor, Disney supervisor, manager actually, proceeded to tell the females that they would have to learn how to wear the Indian dress called a sari, S-A-R-I, mm-hmm. because that's the only place they're going to be able to get a job in the future.
Wow.
And so...
Well, first of all, the ageism that you just described is a violation of federal law. You can't tell people, you know, particularly if they've only been there for 5 years, that you're too old to work here.
Oh, yeah. There's lots and lots of violations of federal law, California state law. Virtually the majority of individual states have similar laws, but it's happening from coast to coast. And when I found out about what happened at Disney, you know, we filed a protest letter with Disney demanding an immediate investigation, and to this day they refuse to investigate what happened.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, give us a sense of what kind of jobs, and I want to be careful with the terms that we're using here, because this is not outsourcing. This is not taking jobs and, you know, allowing a contractor to come in and provide the labor. This is not offshoring. That would be when you set up a call center in Mumbai. This is displacement of American workers based on their citizenship and the likelihood that they would be paid higher wages as a result of being Americans.
Yes, yes. But first, I want to make sure the listeners understand that the lawsuit isn't about individuals coming over here. The individuals are just trying to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the corporation, about the board of directors who've made a conscious decision not to hire Americans. You know, just like in the 1950s and 60s, our country, there were conscious decisions made in every boardroom not to hire African Americans. This is happening now on a wider scale. Everybody, every U.S. worker is excluded from jobs, is going to be excluded from jobs. How big a scale is it? In India, there are job search companies that are advertising for everything from grade school teachers to high school teachers, university professors, attorneys, doctors, landscape architects to work in the United States. It's one of the easiest way for them to get out of their slums and get into the United States is to come here and replace a U.S. worker. And that's exactly what when Congress created in 1990, I believe it was, Congress created the guest worker visa program.
Mm-hmm.
There's various categories. And the one we're looking at right now, it's the H-1B,
right,
which allows an employer to import a foreign worker who is highly skilled in that occupation,
mm-hmm,
as long as the employer pays an equivalent wage to this person, equivalent wage, the same wages that were paid to other U.S. workers, and promises not to replace a U.S. worker. However, in every single instance of H-1Bs coming over, they are meant to replace U.S. workers, and they don't get paid an equivalent wage. They get paid somewhere around $20,000 a year. A quick, interesting story is that there's a importer company called Tata, T-A-T-A Consultancy,
mm-hmm,
and they were sued last year in a class action suit because they claimed they were providing a service to their foreign imports by doing their tax returns. But part of that was the individual worker had to assign the refunds to Tata. So these folks were making like about $25,000 a year. They were making allegedly like $35,000 a year. And then, you know, the taxes were taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And all those refunds, and they got, from what I understand, they got very large refunds. They all went back to the employer. And so these folks were ending up making maybe $20,000 to $25,000 a year.
Wow. And Jim, at Disney, we're talking about some 700 workers who are at risk or may already have been replaced. And what is the skill level? Because Disney has entry-level jobs at the theme parks, and they have a lot of highly skilled workers in the film side, the production side of their business.
Correct. So the 700 number is made up of about 400 individuals from Orlando, Florida, from Disney World, who worked at various jobs, mainly in the IT department. And then there were about 200 or so laid off in Disneyland in Anaheim, California, who were IT workers. And then there was a plan to fire or replace all the U.S. workers in the Burbank studios and in the New York studios who were IT workers in some other miscellaneous categories.
Mm-hmm. So, this is something I have a little experience with. Pardon me. As I told you before we started recording, Jim, Disney has purchased Lucasfilm, George Lucas's production entity, and they formerly had facilities very close to me here in Marin County. And I have a friend who worked there as an editor, a highly skilled woman who came from the Czech Republic. And she worked for Lucasfilm for 3 or 4 years, and she complained that she could never get a raise, that her H-1B status was used to prevent her from making any complaints about workplace rules. And in particular, when there would be a big crunch to finish the special effects for a blockbuster film, for example, she would work 70 or 80 hours a week. And as I recalled, they weren't paying her overtime. It was they acted as if she were an exempt employee. And so we also see that Lucasfilm participated in the scheme that was cooked up by the guy I call Saint Steve Jobs. When Steve Jobs was running Apple, he organized the CEOs in the region of all the tech companies with a no poaching rule, saying, look, you know, our engineers are making 150, 200 grand a year, and that's as much as I want to see them get paid. And so he made deals with Google and Yahoo, and I think Cisco was in it. And Lucasfilm was one of the players. And they had this conspiracy, a gentleman's agreement, that they wouldn't try to compete for the same workers. And so we see that there's a kind of arrogance in the boardroom these days, and workers are really paying quite a price.
Yes. Yeah, it's an extreme arrogance. It's really a malicious arrogance in the boardroom that somehow corporations are above the law. And we've seen that, unfortunately, in that same attitude or the acceptance of that attitude in our government when Wall Street back in 2007 crashed the whole economy through fraudulent schemes, and yet the government said they were too big to fail. So they were saved, and they haven't been prosecuted for their criminal behavior.
Well, wait a minute, Jim, you're rewriting history there. It was predatory borrowers who brought down the economy. It wasn't the banks. I mean, obviously, because no banker has been sent to jail. Not one has even brought before a court and indicted for the fraud that clearly occurred on Wall Street by 2007 or 2008 when they were cooking the books. They were taking low-rated mortgages and stuffing them in packages with good mortgages, and then they got the rating firms to sign off and call them AAA. I'm sorry for my sarcasm here, but you may continue.
Actually, I brought that up because I wanted to kind of direct the conversation to that era, that recession of 2007 to 2010, because it's interesting when we get back to this guest visa program, bringing in workers to replace U.S. workers. The Department of Homeland Security is the government agency charged with managing all the ports of entries when foreigners come in. They have to come through certain ports. Their immigration visas are recorded and tabulated, and the reasons for them are all, the government keeps detailed numbers on who, what, where, and why. And then they publish an annual yearbook, and we know that between 2007 and 2010, there were over 8 million immigrants, foreign workers brought into the United States to take U.S. jobs, because that's what an H-1B and a B-1 and a B-2, all those categories are meant for them to do work here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And over 8 million foreign workers were brought in. I would not say it's pure coincidence that at the same during that same period of time, the Department of Labor noted that over 8 million American workers lost their jobs. Now, I can't say there was a direct cause and effect, but I think it's more than coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add on the fact that during that time of recession, the big corporations who were doing all the importing recorded record profits. Now, I've got an MBA in finance, and it just seems to me, and I don't think you need an MBA in finance, to see there's a certain connection there, that a corporation who's laying off U.S. workers can still survive and make record profits, but who does the work? And then when you look further at the visa applications, these corporations who are making all the money are the ones making the applications and importing all these foreign workers. And so it just kind of leads to the obvious conclusion that during that time of recession, the corporations made the conscious decision to fire American workers and bring in foreign replacements. I'm not saying they caused the recession just for this purpose, but I think the board of directors of these corporations certainly took advantage of what was happening there in that time period.
Well, in business school terms, they're just trying to keep pressure on wages to prevent them from going up. And so they view it in the kind of antiseptic way of, well, you know, we're just trying to control our labor costs to be more competitive across a global market.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what they're telling themselves. And whether you want to argue it's the legitimate reason or not, you know, the fact of the matter is that in this country, the laws require equal access for all. You know, an employer has to give equal access to everybody and cannot say, I don't want to hire African Americans or Chinese. They can't exclude a pregnant woman. You have to accept everybody, and you cannot exclude anybody based on their national origin. And in a sense, I would say that, you know, that's exactly what America is about, is equal access. Give everybody a fair chance, that everybody have equal playing field. But that's not what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in every instance where H-1B comes over and replaces that U.S. worker, that U.S. worker was never given a chance to say, okay, maybe I'll take less money. If you're really looking for lowering your costs, I'll take less money so I could keep my job. I'm suing Molina Healthcare, Inc., a $5 billion corporation in Long Beach. And when they did their firing, they lied to the workers and said, we were losing money, so we need to let you all go. In fact, the day before, they had gotten authorizations from the Department of Labor to bring in one-for-one replacements, foreign workers to replace these U.S. workers who were being laid off. And in fact, they weren't losing money, because Molina Healthcare had recorded a record profit year of over $500 million and went out and bought a whole other company with all those profits. And besides that, I happen to, you know, as my witnesses, I have their senior vice presidents of IT, directors of human resources, director of cost analysis, and they're all telling me that, you know, Molina made a conscious decision to exclude U.S. workers. Plenty of work to go around. They didn't have to lay off anybody,
mm-hmm.
but they just did not want to deal with U.S. workers.
I think that this case and the Disney case, Jim, also illustrate for people the probable impact of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this secretly negotiated deal that's in process right now, that would give global employers much more power to draw their labor from the lowest cost labor pool on the planet. And this, of course, is going to have a stark impact on Americans. We're talking with attorney James Otto. He's based in Northridge, the Los Angeles suburb. And, Jim, I want to ask you, because there's so much attention in the corporate media now to the Donald Trump circus. And he talks about building a wall, a fabulous wall along the Mexican border. And he talks about changing the Constitution to deny citizenship to anyone born in the United States. And these are very extreme and irrational positions. And in particular, the attention on the southern border, I believe, is a racist call, because it is an attempt to define our immigration problem as solely being on the border with Mexico and what Trump would characterize as this invasion of Mexican criminals and rapists who are sent here, as he puts it. But the real issue is better illustrated by the people who you are describing, who are displacing American workers. And there are far more people now who are entering the country and staying on illegally on tourist or other visas than those who actually enter via the southern border.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know, whatever Mr. Trump has to say, I'm sure is great entertainment, but it has no real... It will have no real practical effect on the number of foreign workers that come in and actually take U.S. jobs. If Mr. Trump were to say we need to get rid of the H-1B and the guest visa programs, that would save over a million, probably closer to 1.5 million U.S. workers their jobs each year. That would be real impactful. But either he doesn't understand what's going on, or he doesn't want to pay attention. And, you know, for him not to pay attention to the problem is not unusual for our government, because Congress knows the problem. Every year, or not every year, but every 4 or 5 years, the Government Accounting Office, the GAO, does a study and publishes its conclusion that the whole guest worker visa program is rife with fraud and abuse. Senator Grassley from the state of Iowa, mm-hmm. you know, head of the Judiciary Committee, he's said repeatedly that the programs, the guest worker programs, are rife with fraud. And it even points to the examples where corporations are advertising for foreign workers only.
Yeah.
Right here in the United States, you know, they openly publish, like a billboard in Chicago said, H-1B holders only. So there was a company in Rolling Meadows, Illinois, that published for a technical writer on a project for a Chinese client, and the advertisement read, "Arrogant Americans need not apply."
Wow.
So, it's everywhere. Job fairs that are organized and sponsored by U.S. corporations like Amazon, McAfee, and such, they only invite foreigners. And then you look at what's happening at the university level. The F-1 visa is for foreign students. And there was a time where a foreign student was here to study and study only, could not work. Then Congress decided to change that and allow them to work. Now U.S. corporations are inviting people, students, to come over. They get admitted into a U.S. corporation on the F-1 visa, U.S. university on a F-1 visa. Then they get hired by the corporation. They stay a student for 4 years. When they graduate, they immediately change their status to H-1B. Well, there could have been a U.S. worker doing that job, and should have been a U.S. worker doing that job, but now there aren't anymore. You know, so there's 1.5 million people being brought into this country to take jobs from U.S. workers.
Jim, and coming back to what you said a minute ago about these employers who hold job fairs with a sign that says, you know, H-1B visas only accepted, do they all still display the boilerplate line at the bottom of every employment application, an equal opportunity employer?
Of course they do. And they say, you know, a lot of these employers will say, you know, we invite lateral transfers, meaning, you know, if you're a U.S. worker, come in already employed and with good experience, come in and see us. But then when you look into what the lateral transfers offer, their jobs in Mumbai, India, or Pune, India, or some other small town in, you know, the Middle East. And it requires you to go there. It's walk-in applications only. So you have to travel to Mumbai to hand in your application. And the reality is, of course, in India, they are not as liberal as we are in the United States with their immigration policy. They're not going to allow you into the country to work because mm-hmm. you'll be taking a job from an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quid pro quo. It's not fair at all.
Yeah, and I sense that you have considerable empathy for the individual workers who come in under an H-1B, and it's not your attempt to demonize them. You're attacking the employers who exploit these people at the expense of honorable Americans who, like Bill Clinton said, worked hard and played by the rules.
Oh, absolutely. It's not the individual's fault. Anybody, you know, parents will do what's necessary to earn a living, to supply food and housing to their children. People do that, and that's good. Those are good, honest people. But these individuals, these individual Indians don't understand, or they could be Chinese or whomever, but they don't understand that the corporate bosses are excluding U.S. workers. It's no longer an even playing field. And if you give a U.S. worker an even playing field, he'll win. Every single time he'll win, because U.S. workers know how to work together. We're brought up to be a team. We work with each other. In other cultures, not so. And that's why when surveyed, and I believe it was Duke University did a survey among U.S. employers, the survey resulted in a conclusion that U.S. workers prefer, or U.S. corporations prefer U.S. workers because, you know, of teamwork. But that happened to be, that study was done way back in the 1990s. Today, I don't think you're going to find that same result, because it's going to be hard to find any corporation that actually will willingly employ a U.S. worker. But,
and Jim, we also need to redefine what it means to be an American corporation. Because just one slice of this is the tax cheats in Silicon Valley, led by Apple Computer, that has now nearly $200 billion in profits that are stashed offshore. Google, I think, is in the $50 billion range, and it kind of goes down. I think eBay has a pittance of, 10 or $15 billion outside the country. But, you know, these are people who operate, and they enjoy access to the U.S. markets and our huge consumer base here, but they do not return that by paying their fair share of taxes that support the infrastructure, the educational system that produces competitive workers, especially at the higher skill levels, and other parts of the so-called commons. And so they're ripping us off. Now they're exploiting our workers in this very cruel and cynical way, and they extract profits from the American consumer, but they don't act as a good American citizen.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Back around, I believe it was 2000, a gentleman named Jack Abramoff went on trial for influence peddling, and Mr. Abramoff had extremely close connections to Microsoft and some of the other high-tech companies you mentioned. And he was convicted of influence peddling, and there was evidence in trial that he had passed around something like $120 million to congressmen so that they would not enforce the work visa programs and had modified the work visa programs to take away many, many protections for U.S. citizens. As soon as that trial was over, Mr. Abramoff was whisked off to prison. One of the senators put all that evidence under seal, and it's not being released. I'm hesitating because I just went blank with his name. It's the senator from John McCain.
Arizona.
So it was Senator McCain who put all that evidence under congressional seal. And what's curious is that every year since that happened, John McCain receives about $150,000 from the lobbying firm that was once owned by Mr. Abramoff.
Greenberg Traurig.
Yes.
I had the dubious distinction of interviewing Abramoff after he left prison on his apology book tour, and He was very interesting because he would apologize for the things that had been exposed. But in particular, I tried to talk to him about the way he pumped more than $20 million into the state of Alabama in a double-cross game where he took money from Indian tribes that have casinos and use that to try to block the state of Alabama from developing a state lottery to support education. And in that, Don Siegelman, the Democratic governor, ended up being railroaded into federal prison. And Abramoff had a role in that, but when I asked him about it, his amnesia just kicked in full force. And since you brought it up, I want to remind our listeners of the Mariana Islands. And Abramoff and his pals were the lobbyists who led Tom DeLay around on a little a special leash and took him to the Marianas where, you know, they would give these glowing reports. And we know that workers there were in slave-like conditions, that women were often reporting being raped and unable to get an abortion after being repeatedly raped. And so the sordid, and fraudulent games that were played during that period of time appear to have just become a little more regularized and, they're smoother. They're not getting caught in these glaring examples of unfair practices and insider dealing.
Mm-hmm. And there's a professor, Norman Matloff, who's at the University of UC Davis. He's studied this problem of H-1B fraud and abuse for I believe, about 30 years now. He quotes that certain members of Congress who have admitted to him that they didn't like this employment preference visas, this guest worker visas, because it's not good for the U.S. worker. But the corporations, U.S. corporations, love it, and these congressmen admitted to him that they went along, that congresspersons went along with it, because the campaign contributions from U.S. corporations were just too big to turn down. Reminds me of the words of the former Senator Bob Dole, who said that the poor don't contribute to campaign funds. Mm-hmm. And so who gets all the consideration?
Yeah.
And, of course, Donald Trump admits so much, I mean, as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. And also, Jim, I don't know if you're aware of it, but Mark Zuckerberg, the billionaire founder of Facebook, he started a political action committee. I think it's called Forward.us. And they pass money around to senators, including some hardline conservatives, to promote what they call immigration reform. But it is a thinly veiled effort to expand the pool of H-1B workers.
Yes. Yeah. And speaking of expanding the pool of H-1B workers, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in 2010 authorized investments of over $50 million U.S. dollars into building schools in foreign countries such as Sri Lanka and Armenia, and I believe there was a third country, to build computer schools or schools to study computers. And the intended purpose was then those students would then be available to come to the United States on H-1B visas to take U.S. jobs. In December of 2011, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton published an announcement from the State Department to all the embassies in India, which I happen to have a copy of, authorizing the U.S. embassies to take unlimited numbers of visa applications, guest worker visa applications, and to process them, which is very curious. Why would a Secretary of State do that when the statute, the congressional statute, says that it's limited to 80,000 a year, and certainly limitless applications being processed is not the same as 80,000 a year, which, of course, brings up the question, then, how can this country import over 1.5 million foreign workers on these guest visas when, in fact, there's supposed to be numerical limitations?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact of the matter is, perhaps thanks to Mr. Abramoff's contributions, one of the amendments to the guest visa program was that the Department of Labor may not investigate the authenticity or accuracy of the visa application. I believe they have 7 to 10 days. The Secretary of the Department of Labor has 7 to 10 days to approve it, not investigate, but merely to approve it. And if they don't, if the department does not act in that time, then it's deemed approved.
Hmm.
So the investigations that discover fraud and abuse happen subsequently after the worker comes in, and either doesn't work at the place as that they're supposed to be working at, isn't getting paid the money they're supposed to be paid, things like that. But the amount of money that Congress allocates to the Department of Justice to investigate such abuse is really minuscule. It's less than $10 million a year, and there's only one attorney that does it for the whole nation. So that attorney is I've spoken with her, and she's really, really, you know, swamped. And there's been virtually no prosecution of any H-1B importer who's broken the law.
And Jim, what is the status of your action against the Disney Corporation right now? Have you filed the lawsuit?
The status is that it's in its infancy, because in California, there's a prerequisite that I have to, or my client has to, file an administrative complaint with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing before mm-hmm. we could go to civil court. That's been done. Once we get our right to sue letter from the state, then we will file a civil complaint with the Superior Court in Los Angeles. So that's when the lawsuit will actually start. I anticipate that being done before the end of the year.
Now, I note in the news release that I got that you've also named the Screen Actors Guild as a defendant in this action. I'll explain a little bit, and I'll just tell you that I am a member of the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, where I have been involved for decades, and I'm just curious what the angle is on SAG.
Well, it's a separate legal action. We filed a complaint with administrative complaint with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, because my client, who's female, had breast cancer, and she had to go into the hospital to have procedures done. SAG knew about that, and when she got out, they knew she needed to go for further treatments, chemo treatments. So she, instead of bothering SAG, you know, her employer, she would go to these treatments during her lunch hour. And occasionally she'd come back 5, maybe 10 minutes late. Well, they brought in a CIO, Chief Information Officer, of Indian descent, who didn't like that. And they fired her because she was tardy too much, even though she was receiving treatment for a known disability. That's illegal. Then it comes to light that they've been bringing in H-1B. At least that's the allegation at this time. And again, this complaint's in its infancy, so I still have to verify that. But she was replaced by somebody who's been identified as an H-1B visa holder.
Hmm.
Well,
Jim, after the show, I would be interested in any information you'd like to share about the case against the Screen Actors Guild, because as a member, I'd like to know more, and I would certainly advocate for fair treatment inside the union if that's what I see is called for from the information you provide.
Sure, I'll provide you that information.
All right, great. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge about this insidious and kind of growing effort to displace American workers with non-citizens. And I hope that listeners will be active on this and talk to their elected leaders, members of Congress and the Senate, because the first thing we need to do is expose the scope of this. And then, you know, it has to become a part of any effort, if we can ever get rational, about immigration law in this country at so-called reform.
Well, I agree. The people have got to be informed in order to bring Congress, you know, to their right mind, to a reasonable state of mind, in order to start protecting Americans from this type of blatant discrimination.
And, Jim, I'm going to put up a link to your website at your law office in case listeners want to get more information or perhaps get in touch with you to report a case of similar dimensions.
I appreciate that. But, again, I still have to fix that hacked website, but that'll be done in the next couple of days for sure.
Okay. Well, as long as it's not Ashley Madison, I will still refer my listeners there, okay?
Okay. All right.
Attorney James Otto, thanks for joining me today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you for having me. It's been enjoyable.
Let me know your comments about this disturbing trend. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet. again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds?